and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Mabbitt, and this is episode 16, where we bring you the conclusion of my conversation with Matt Peden about just war theory. And so we left off right kind of in the middle there. We're talking about discrimination in combat, and so now we're going to be picking up and discussing proportionality and what is a justified response and the amount of force we can use in combat. Why don't we just nuke all our enemies automatically? And we also talk about how do you do just war theory right and wrong? And we wrap up with a conversation discussing why we should care about this, why the average Christian in a church should have some knowledge of this topic, and that why we shouldn't leave it just to the military or just to the politicians to have thoughts and opinions about these things. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation. I personally find this stuff just fascinating and challenging to challenge me to think about things in areas that I haven't thought before. So, okay, that's enough for me. Let's go into the conversation, and thanks for listening.
What about proportionality?
So proportionality would be the amount of force that you may sort of bring to bear against your enemy in the prosecution of a war. So the most basic, I guess, example would be if a nation executes some sort of attack, and say this attack goes terribly, it doesn't work out for that nation, and they only end up killing 10 people on the other nation's military. What should the response be for that? Say that nation retreats back to their homeland, says, you know what, that didn't work out, bad idea, sorry about that. The other nation should not go ahead and steamroll the entire other nation's military. The question is, and you can even dial that down to while we have targets that the people or the things themselves are military targets, does it make sense for us to attack that target? And one of the ways you can get to kind of talk about that is through an economy of force kind of discussion, where you say, well, you know, we only have so many bombs, so many missiles, so much jet fuel, so much this, so much that. Maybe we should focus on the things that are really important to the mission and not things that are not important to the mission. I think that's a way of that conversation is very similar. It will get you going down the right path, albeit I don't think it's a moral conversation. It is a practical, economical, sort of accountant-type perspective on proportionality. But that's where proportionality can even go, what is right to attack and what is not.
So in proportionality, this is the reason, this explains why, if we were playing a video game and I had a list of, weapons at my disposal, and I'm going to war, if I am, 10-year-old Eric, or I don't know, particularly annoyed Eric or something, I might probably just start nuking everybody. Right. And so, yeah. Proportionality helps to explain why we don't just nuke a country. They kill a few of our soldiers, so we drop an A-bomb on them. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, because that's not a proportional response. It is unjust to destroy and wreck that kind of indiscriminate havoc, mm-hmm, upon an area that, particularly with a weapon that is indiscriminate, like a, mm-hmm, bomb that doesn't discriminate between man, woman, child, or soldier. So, yeah. That helps to us explain kind of why we choose the responses that we do.
Yes, absolutely. And that example of just nuking or dropping an A-bomb on a country, turning it into glass, wiping it out, whatever kind of term to use there, those would kind of both be, it'd be non-discriminatory and it would be non-proportional. So if you wanted to just dial into just the proportionality discussion, you could give an example of you have an island or, I suppose an island is probably a good example, and it's only military. Can you wipe out the whole thing? And let's say it's a big island and you've got millions of military on that island and structures and all that stuff. Can you wipe it all out? Because let's say that would be executing discrimination, but it might not be executing proportionality. They very frequently go hand in hand because the larger the weapon, the larger the destruction, the more likely that you cannot guarantee that only a proper target will be affected by that weapon.
Yeah. And so we have these, major categories. Were there any other categories or subcategories that we needed to cover?
That would be it. There's certainly other things to that do come up.
These are probably the most common, though.
Those would be absolutely the most common.
So, because you'll hear about these when you're talking about should we go into armed conflict with this, you know, with Libya or Syria or things like that, and you'll hear some of these topics get thrown, these phrases get thrown about, and so yep. Just cause or just conduct or discrimination, proportionality, and so one of the ways that we've seen there's a good ways to use just war tradition and bad ways to use just war tradition, and I know that like at least one author we've read and other people have said this that the wrong way to do just war theory is to just treat it like a checklist, that as long as you check these boxes or most of the boxes ish yeah. like you're good to go. Mm-hmm. But actually even before that, sorry, I want to get to that, but I want to get into, actually, no, let's go there.
Sure.
So is that, what's the problem with that?
So, one problem with that, certainly from a Christian perspective, is it does nothing to address people. The people in the militaries, the civilians who will be affected by it, and perhaps even a larger discussion. And I think if somebody's using a checklist kind of method, they're likely to be on one side of the spectrum while they're doing a decent effort to follow the just war theory tradition. They're likely either somebody who can't wait to go to war. We call them war hawks most of the time. So they're looking and researching and trying to figure out what other boxes we can check, or they're on the other end of the spectrum and they're saying, no, look, it's not our last resort. We could still try this. We could still try that. We haven't checked all the blocks yet. And so that's, I guess, an additional two ways that you can misuse just war theory in general, but I think especially if you're going to use it as kind of a checklist mentality.
Yeah, and so that is a problem. And so, I guess what's the alternative then?
So, I think there's no substitute for wisdom. There's no substitute for building good ethics and good morals, sound judgment into our leaders. When we elect a leader, most of the time we have almost no idea of what that leader is really going to face while they are leading us and while they're executing that public office. And they will a lot of times show up when they're running for an office with sort of a checklist of, here's my to-do list, here's the things that I think are right and wrong, here's what we're going to do about it. But most of the time, you really don't know based on those things, what they're planning on doing with a situation that nobody's considered yet. So when it comes to electing a leader, we ought to know, or we'll say other types of unelected leaders, there's no substitute for those leaders having been groomed and mentored to, and them, they themselves reading and studying all of the discussions that have gone on with this in the past, so that they have the ability to face a novel situation and apply the principles that nobody has specifically spoken to. And I think our culture in general has leaned too much on rules. And I think that's possibly indicative of we're not teaching people morals enough. So in the absence of that, we'll just make rules. And so somebody doesn't have to be. Yes, go ahead.
So there's a couple things that pop into my mind. There's a quote, and I think it's by Montesquieu, who said that it's more important to be well formed than to be well filled in terms of your mind. And so, just think about how somebody, like, they know all the rules, quote unquote, but they haven't been, their thinking hasn't been formed by them. They just use them as an excuse to do what they want to do. Where, it also reminds me of Jesus's interactions with the Pharisees, who said, you know, you keep all of the laws, but you miss the heart of it. And so, you know, if you haven't been affected by it, you haven't been changed by it, because if you actually believed the word of God, you would believe me. Right. And so you're the most strict adherence of the rules, yet you're literally missing the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
And so I think that really does get into where the problem is, because someone goes, oh, well, I checked all the boxes, you know, or I checked most of them, you know, or I checked the most important ones. And so we get into that problem. Well, let's get into why this matters, because, I mean, first, I mean, why is, we've hinted at a little bit, but why is it important specifically? I think in terms of, if you didn't have the just war tradition to help formulate our thinking, what other types of war might we be given over to?
Sure, absolutely. Two ends of the spectrum, I think, we'd be given to going to war for any and every reason. We'd be, along with that camp, it would be, hey, we just want to spread our way of thinking. So if somebody disagrees, we're going to war with them. We can see that wars of religion frequently go because of that. Hey, they're not converting, so we'll make them convert. And not just religion, but other things as well. And then you have the opposite end of the spectrum, which is we will not go to war for anything. Nothing at all. Anybody could do anything, and we will never go to war. So both of those are bad places to be. And I think just war theory does a good job, and I don't want to say it impersonally like that, because the people who have worked on just war theory and the just war tradition have sought to not just strike a balance between the two, but find out what is right. What can we find out from God's word? What can we find out just from general wisdom type principles of what is right, what is wrong, to defend or protect him? And when is it time to refrain from going to war over something?
Yeah. And I know you used to have a quote from Sun Tzu, right? About how the art of war, I have it right here. The art of war is of vital importance to the state. It's a matter of life and death, a road either to safety or ruin. Hence, it is a subject of inquiry which can of no account be neglected. And so, you know, and that's coming from an unbeliever. You know, that's
right.
And so it's vital then, important. It's important now. So it's important for the state. But really, the last thing I want to get into in our conversation today is why this matters. For like why the average person listening, the average Christian listening, and the why this matters, why can't we just leave this to the military and the politicians to take care of? Why do civilians need to have a knowledge of this or interact with this?
Well, most easily stated, because we elect the politicians and the politicians oversee the military. So if we elect poor politicians and they do a poor job in executing their duties, it leads right one thing to another. This government was formed by we, the people. And so I think that in a nation where the average citizen does essentially nothing to affect the outcome of its own nation, we'll say in a monarch where they're going to just pass it to their children and citizens will have no say in the international affairs of their nation, I think there's a little bit less of a responsibility there for them to know. It certainly would be better for them to know when their nation is doing something right or wrong, and whether to support or not what their nation is doing. But especially us as Americans, where we must go and vote. And so we hold the politicians sort of accountable by not electing them or reelecting them if they're doing a good job. So if we won't do it as citizens, then who will do it?
Yeah.
Because we may very well elect those who care not for just war theory tradition, or perhaps hold to a different one.
Well, let me ask you this, because you're a flight instructor, but you've also flown in combat missions. I'm not going to ask you anything about it, but sure. but you've flown for the Navy. You've engaged in not just war tradition, mm-hmm. but you've been deployed, and so as a Christian pilot, why do you, just personally, can you speak to why it's important for your fellow church members to be able to have some knowledge, and even if it overlaps with your previous answer, but just sure. personally, like, you know, at our church, you know, why it's beneficial for the pastor to have some understanding of this, and for other members of your church to understand to have some at least conversational knowledge about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So Jesus said that we are the salt of the earth, and salt in those days was most often used for preservation, for preserving meat. So if we are to preserve the earth, and there's probably many applications, but I think one of them is certainly that we are to preserve the principles of right and wrong, of justice and righteousness on earth. So as a church member, very easily, we know, and it's become very common, people want to know which of the candidates running for an office are pro-choice and which ones are pro-life. And that has become certainly almost a requirement for a lot of people, and as it ought to be. And I think in the same way with electing our leaders, Christians of all people ought to know what the Lord has said about it, so that we can vote rightly, and then we can affect our fellow member of our American society who the right choice is and why. Of course, we hope that leads somebody to ask more questions about the Lord. But even if they don't, that would provide for our time here on earth, a nation that lives by a Christian worldview will be a much more, I don't know how to say this exactly, but I would rather live in that nation than in one that doesn't know what it holds to, or holds to the opposite of a Christian worldview, something that opposes justice and righteousness. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish up.
Sure. Frequently, what I'll hear from people in talking about this, and I'm sure you've heard it before, is that you can't legislate righteousness. And I And Ben Shapiro has talked about this, and I'll quote him by saying that that is patently wrong, or patently false, I believe is what he said. That's mostly what a nation does, is they legislate what they believe to be right, and what they believe to be wrong. So anyone who thinks, and many Christians probably think this too, that, hey, I don't want to impose my morals or my values on my nation, well, then other people in your nation will impose their morals and values on you. So a nation absolutely decides what's right and wrong. And so as Christians, we absolutely, and just knowing that if this is the world that God has made and he made the rules, then we ought to run this world by those rules as much as we can. Somebody else gave me a quote. I don't remember who this is from, but the man will often say, in God's universe, this is how it works. These are the right things and the wrong things. You may not like that, but you don't have a universe.
Yeah. So. Well, and one of the things that, and that's really good, it's, you know, an informed Christian citizenship makes a better nation. And so, and also in the church, they, you know, there's often, there can be a separation between people who are in the military and the civilian Christians. And because just the natural, you know, they live on base or just have a different life. There's just different demands. And so, and when you, or you talk to somebody and in the, you'll talk to people in the church and you'll get like, you know, some, you know, people who haven't studied it, and they'll be like, well, but wasn't Jesus a pacifist, or, you know, mm-hmm. shouldn't we turn the other cheek? And it's like, and it's really not to get on to those folks, but just to say, like, it actually helps to, I guess, lower the divide that exists between people who've committed themselves to military service for at least for a time and other people in their church. So you sit side by side and you're like, here, I got somebody alongside me that is wrestling with the same things that I'm wrestling with. And, you know, you're wrestling with them differently because you actually fly and train other pilots to fly. Mm-hmm. Whereas like I don't, or other people outside of the military do not do that. But at the same time, it's still from this, it's important for civilians to have that, and Christians, fellow Christians, to have that, because I think honestly, just it helps bring a support to you and to mm-hmm. other members of the military to go, hey, we got these civilians over here and they've actually got a pretty good knowledge of it. Even if we disagree about things, at least they get what we're disagreeing about. And they actually, mm-hmm. and it's not just kind of this uninformed kind of thing. And I think it touches on this kind of, well, before it, kind of this, about this thing about experts. We love mm-hmm. experts and we hate experts. Right. Yeah. We used to be a nation, or I guess as a people, it's very popular to, it was just appeal to the expert. And we've almost, the pendulum has almost swung the entire way to like, who needs an expert? We don't need experts. But the problem is kind of both are true. Like mm-hmm. you don't need an expert to think. Right. Yeah. And so we talk about, you know, us being experts, and it's like, wait, look, you and I are not experts in this topic. Mm-hmm. We've read books. We've had thoughts. we've talked to people. We've had people, you know, people tell you or me, they're like, hey, you need to read this book or read that book. Or, if you want to have, or if you want anyone to take you seriously, you have to read X. And to some degree, I'm kind of like, well, I disagree with take me seriously. But I also do, I'll take that book recommendation and I'll go read it. You yeah. know what I mean? The problem is that if we use the experts as a crutch, then we're going to wait around for the experts to save us and to tell us what to think. But yeah. if we dismiss the experts, then if we in our free thinking have totally gotten off base and gotten it wrong, and we're missing a major thing, and an expert could come in and say, hey, actually, you need to think about it this way. And you go like, oh, okay, they could provide valuable insight. And so I think it's kind of this mixture we have. And this kind of just touches this area where somebody goes, just war theory, that's for experts. That's for PhD guys. That's for military guys. I'm just a civilian. I'm just a mom at home, or I'm just a guy going to work. Like, I don't have time to think about that. And it's like, okay, well, you don't have to think about it every day, but if you're gonna say whether or not that we should have bombed Libya, then you're having just war theory talk. And so, yes. And so it would actually do you good to just do even a small amount of research into it.
Yes. And the time to look into it is not the time when you're all emotional over something that's happening or about to happen. And we definitely would rather not consider war. I think we can all agree war is rather disagreeable. I would rather there be a world where, you know, we all just agreed. How's that? So for anyone to consider war kind of brings up a lot of bad thoughts, bad things that you're imagining. What if this, what if that? Anytime there's an international crisis that looks like it might lead to war, you will immediately find all over social media, everywhere you go, you will find just war theorists. And by that, I mean every person who has an opinion. So it's
every person with a Twitter account becomes a social a just war theorist.
Yes, exactly.
Just like how everybody online is net, we're all now virologists.
Right? Exactly. Yep. We all know a lot more about that now. But yeah, absolutely. The time to think about it is now. And I guarantee, if you're not interested in it now, you will become very interested once you think your life might be affected by a war. So I definitely would recommend, suggest, especially to the Christian, to look into it at least a little bit.
Yeah, and also that's what this is. This is an introduction to just war theory, and we're going to wrap it up here. So, want to talk to you before off the recording, but definitely sure. Want to. Now I'm going to put you on the spot. No, just kidding. But want to have you back. Hopefully we can get maybe some other guys to come in and be able to talk through some more just war theory issues, and to really, I really want to see how some of these are, for people to see how these things are relevant and important. And then now before we go, I saw a child there. Was that Charity?
It is. This is Charity.
So hey Charity. So we should, before we go, we should note that you are the proud father of five children.
Yes.
So,
and you're the proud father of six.
That's right. Better than you. Better. So that's what that means. No. So you and I have a wonderful friendship in not only talking about just war theory stuff, but parenting gaggles of children. So
yes, many good conversations.
Yeah, and how big a vehicle we need to have to do it effectively. So,
yep.
all right. Well, this was awesome. Thank you for giving time for this, and it was really great talking with you and seeing you on the screen. So,
So and you as well. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to the next time.
Yeah, so definitely get you back on. So we'll talk to you later.
And that's another episode of the Rookie Pastor Podcast. If you enjoyed that and you'd like to get in touch with me, you can reach me at eric@baileychurch.com. You can go over to the Rookie Pastor website, therookiepastor.com, and you can reach me there as well. Until next time, for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabin. And remember, just one step at a time.